We've just been talking about an exhibition that's on with plenty of photographs in the Auckland Railway Group, and being joined today by Gerald Slack and Michael O'Neill. And what we've got next then, Linkford and Gardner, I believe, Gerald, yep?
Yeah, thanks, Chris, and thanks for handing back over. Yeah, I did touch upon the Linkford and Gardner thing at the end of the previous session, where we've got a little bit of Linkford and Gardner in the 4 o'clock exhibition. Linford and Gardner are a real enigma. Whilst there's no doubt they operate from their railway street mm-hmm. premises as a major sort of colliery, railway engineer, okay. etc. Getting any from really sort of the middle of the 19th century through mm-hmm. to about 1930, there are always a problem in terms of getting any information together, because as an operation they right. never kept any records. There's virtually nothing in the public domain. Oh. And it's certainly a challenge that Michael and I wanted to take up, because mm-hmm. to actually tell the story of a major railway manufacturer right in the centre of the town, with trains running into railway street, steam trains, you know, right. it's a real story to tell. And it was certainly a topic that we committed to when we opened the exhibition. It was. And it was certainly something that Michael will speak for himself, that an itch that Michael needed to scratch.
It was, certainly was, yeah.
Michael had been running with the story longer than I had posted various bits and pieces on Facebook mm-hmm. and things yeah. like that, but we could never really get to the story.
Okay.
But two things happened. We struggled on, and two events occurred, and it was really Michael's persistence rather than mine that mm-hmm. actually unlocked the doors. One, Michael formed a relationship with Duff Timber in Railway Street, and Duff Timber right. still occupy some of the buildings that were originally the Linford
really?
And Gardner.
Yeah.
Going back to the 1850s, some of those buildings in Railway
well,
Street.
Still
Railway
stand.
Street is a very historic street mm-hmm. in Bishop Auckland terms. And they gave us access to their legal documentation dating back to 1856, which, trust me, was a blessing in disguise and not mm-hmm. a blessing, because I've got this box full of stuff about 4 inches thick that covers it. But the history was there. And for the first time, we got a window into their existence, and a window who were the partners in the company mm-hmm. and the history of the company and how it changed hands. And secondly, we tracked down what can only be called a small Linford and Gardner archive to a museum in Newton Abbott in Devon.
Wow.
Don't ask me why, Chris. Right. Don't ask me why it's in Devon, because National Railway Museum at Shildon don't have anything. Mm. National Railway
no.
Museum at York don't
no.
have anything. Mm. Industrial Locomotive Society didn't nothing. Have anything. Mm. So the three obvious right. people who should have something on a major right. railway engineering company in Bishop Auckland had nothing. The lady down there, who was called Cheryl, the curator, who was absolutely helpful to me and knew that really what I really wanted to do was to copy it on and send it to me yeah. rather than drive 500,
oh, yes.
700 miles
that's
to
it,
do it.
That's
and
that's
we so armed with these two bits of stuff, we're on. And it, to use a Sherlock Holmes expression, the chase was on now.
Mm-hmm.
We scented we could get to this story, really. And the rest was very much down to hard work, mainly by Michael, who did a lot of research on family genealogy and early commercial trading in the town.
I did, yeah.
Mike was never off the internet, were you, son?
No, not for about a month.
And I tell you what, lots of blind alleys. Very yes. difficult to get stuff on the Gardner family.
Really
very,
hard.
Very difficult mm-hmm. on the Gardner yes. family. In fact, the Gardner family archive has been taken off the genealogy site.
It has, for some reason, in 2002.
Disappeared.
Okay. It's disappeared.
Yeah, a little bit more around the Linkfords. But, I mean, the one thing that came out of it, I mean, and we've burst quite a few myths with the book, the general perception, and I say general perception because Michael and I shared this perception.
We did. Yeah.
Is it was actually Joseph Linkford who was the partner with John Gardner.
Okay.
Joseph Linkford, quite famous in Bishop terms, the baking soda mm-hmm. business, the custard pie business.
That's right, yes.
It wasn't.
No.
It was his brother Samuel. Samuel okay. Linkford was actually the partner in Linkford
he
and
was,
Gardner.
Right?
And
yeah.
Sam,
right.
Samuel had shops on Newgate Street. He was a grocer. He had shops in Towlaw, Stanley,
yes.
various other locations.
No, right the way around the area then.
Right the way around the area, and he was the partner. So we actually launched the brief history at the 4 o'clock on the 13th of this month
mm-hmm.
and received very good reviews, mainly from Bishop Press and the Northern Echo. The Northern Echo, in fact, ran three articles on it.
Yeah,
that's right, that's all those.
Yeah, Chris was absolutely fascinated by this sort of unlocking of some early town's mm-hmm. history, as is my old friend Mike Amos. Mike's very much interested, as you know, in
yes,
Shildon and
right.
Bishop Auckland and these areas, and Jeff, really, in Bishop Press was very supportive mm-hmm. as well. So we certainly managed to get it out there. And it really, I mean, to think that steam trains were running mm-hmm. off the yeah. link, off the line, near the
that's
station,
right.
into the centre of Bishop Auckland. And we managed to actually locate, the book actually lists a lot of the steam trains itself and the work that was
that's
done
right.
on the trains and all the rest mm-hmm. of it. And The other thing that came out of the book, and I think really would fascinate and is very topical, is that not only were they actually a colliery and railway engineer, they're also a bicycle manufacturer. And not just any...
Right, I don't think a lot of people knew that, you know.
No, I don't think so.
Auckland Cycle Works was an own subsidiary of Linford and Gardner. It was started by one of the Gardner brothers called Alfred Gardner, about 1894, who previously had a bit of a cycle repair business. And they actually manufactured a bike called the Rational Umpire, which I'll come on more to in a minute, which was a world-leading design in terms of spring frame technology. It was a spring frame bike. I think we all need to remember the roads back in 18... We might complain about the roads today, but in 1894 they were different. And it was very, very uncomfortable to ride bikes around. So this thing had spring framing under the seat and on the telescopic front and back of the bike. So, and it was actually patented in the UK, Europe, and the USA. It was that significant, the bike, actually. And really, that sort of history was really quite significant. And in the other thing that always troubled people, and I know Chris had always been troubled by it, why was the bike called the Rational Umpire? Well, we actually got to that explanation, because everybody talks about the Olympians and Laura Trott and the rise of female cycling now. It actually started back in 1893. With an amazing, which event was actually of world famous at the time, when a young lady called Tessie Reynolds cycled famously from London to Brighton return on a man's bike in a world record time, dressed in what was rational clothing, which essentially was man's clothing. It was a hat, it was a jacket, it was pantaloon trousers. And she became a real icon of the age, and really that's where the word rational came from. And the umpire bit, her father was a racing umpire. There was a lot of early cycle racing, long-distance cycle racing. He was an umpire. And the book, actually, I'm not going to give too much away at this stage, actually talks about some very early world championship cycle racing that took place in Bishop Auckland in 1881. So it's that sort of history. Big company, employed over 50 people, and were a major figure in the town, really. Unfortunately, time moved on as the coal industry started to die down, particularly after the Great War. After the Great War... In 1917, 1918, there were still 17,000 men within a five-mile radius of Bishop Auckland employed in the mining industry.
Right.
That's a dramatic number of people. But coal was starting to die away in those days. We had the general strike in 1926 and the depression years that followed. And coal mining, the number of men employed in the mines actually went down dramatically. There was something like 65-70% male employment. Unemployment in the 1930s in Bishop Auckland. It was that sort of dramatic. And Linford and Gardner fell foul of that.
They did, yes, unfortunately.
They couldn't survive that fall back in it, really. So there's a real story to be told about that. Really, I'm not going to say too much more about it, because I don't want to give too much more about it.
Exactly. And I have to say, mind, I mean, I've got a copy of your book, this Linford book, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Enjoyed it. In fact, a friend of mine was telling me just recently that her late mother used to work at Linford's.
They're coming out. Well, that's a very good lead into just what I was going to finish. As always, paucity of information is a real problem with these books. But a thing happened on the day of the event, which was amazing. We'd had a couple of very early Linford and Gardner workforce photographs of a lady who'd left them for us at the
We did.
We'd never met the lady.
No.
Okay.
So she left us the photographs, and one of them appears in the book. She arrived on the day, of the book launch, and her name was Anne Woodward. And I met Anne Woodward, and she was an amazing lady. Not only did her grandfather work there, but her great-grandfather worked there. And she said, give me half an hour and I'll bring you something that might be of interest. And she returned back with an original 1866 on parchment indenture document from her great-grandfather, who was actually apprenticed into Linford and Gardner at the tender age of 12 as an apprentice engine fitter in 1866. I mean, we're doing more research on it, and if people go on the website, on the news section, we'll find a little article that adds a lot more detail to that and the connections. I mean, indications are at the moment it might be the oldest railway-related apprentice indenture document in the world. Yep. It, there might not
it's
be
possible.
Yeah. It's possible it could be as old as that. We've certainly had conversations through with the National Railway Museum.
Yes.
There's nothing out there from Shildon that's that old. Anyway, I think I've said enough. The book the book is out there, as Chris kindly said some good words about it there. It's for sale at the Four Clocks itself, Bishop Station, Bongard Books. I think there's even some in Bishop Library, so it's in, it's only a fiver. I mean, it's not a thick book, but it's heavily illustrated.
Yes.
And attempts very much to tell the story I've been talking about this morning about the development of the town.
Yes.
As much from the 1840s to the 1930s, not just the Linford and Gardner.
Yeah, if anybody out there has got any artefacts from their time and around, you know, worked in Linford, get in touch with us here at Bishop FM, even. And if you've got any artefacts that you would like to donate to the exhibition, drop them in at the Four Clocks.
Well, there's two things in particular we're searching hard for, one of which we know exists.
Yeah.
Okay.
One is a Linford and Gardner engine plate. I think we're going to get there without having a real chance. The other thing, which would be the absolute pearl for us, would be a rational umpire bike.